Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Okay, so have you ever thought you really knew a historical figure, like their story was set in stone, and then boom, something comes along that just completely reshapes that image?
Oh, absolutely. Happens all the time.
Well, that's exactly what we're digging into today with Ulysses S. Grant. For, gosh, over a century, his legacy has been kind of painted in these dark shades, you know, the bumbling drunk, the corrupt president.
Right. Those labels really stuck.
But the main source we're exploring, Ron Chernow's huge biography, Grant, it just takes a chisel to all that. It's this massive, really revisionist look.
It really is. Monumental is the right word.
So our mission here is to try and uncover the real Grant, or at least Chernow's version of him. Not that caricature, but a really consequential leader, morally progressive even, with a vision way ahead of his time.
And we'll look at how that incredible legacy got so systematically torn down and how it's now, thankfully, being rebuilt.
It's fascinating, isn't it? How these misconceptions about Grant just got so deeply embedded in our history.
It really is. And this deep dive, it's not just about Grant. You know, it tells us so much about how historical memory gets built, or sometimes how it gets twisted.
Especially with things like the Lost Cause narrative.
Exactly. That whole post-Civil War mythology, the one that sort of glorified the Confederacy and, let's be honest, tried to justify slavery.
Yeah.
I did that partly by demonizing Union leaders.
Yeah.
And Grant was a prime target.
And Chernow, he's the guy to tackle this, right? Pulitzer winner, known for biographies on Hamilton, Washington, figures who also needed some re-examining.
Precisely. He has this knack for rehabilitating misunderstood figures. And his background in financial history, that gives him this unique lens on Grant's business failures, too. It's not just the military side.
So, okay, if Chernow's perspective holds water, who was this guy, Grant? And why does his story matter so much right now?
Well, Chernow calls him one of America's most consequential and misunderstood figures, straight up.
And the book aims to be like the definitive account, correcting all that historical slander, as he puts it.
Yeah, synthesizing decades of scholarship, but with a fresh, powerful argument.
And what really jumps out is this dual nature, isn't it? The military genius who saved the Union, obviously, but also the president who was a fierce advocate for civil rights. That flies right in the face of a Lost Cause stuff from day one.
And that connects to the bigger picture, right? Grant's story, it's really America's story in miniature. That journey from a nation torn apart, grappling with its own ideals about equality.
It feels incredibly relevant today.
It absolutely does. It touches on race, democracy, moral leadership, all things we're still wrestling with. Chernow's goal isn't just to polish Grant's image. It's to show why it was tarnished.
Because he stood for protecting African-American rights.
Exactly. That commitment made him a target. It wasn't random character assassination. It had a very specific, racially charged agenda behind it.
Wow. Okay, so let's trace that path. How does this quiet kid from Ohio, who seemed kind of destined for obscurity, become, you know, General Grant and then President Grant fighting for equality?
It's an amazing trajectory.
It starts pretty humbly, right? Point Pleasant, Ohio, 1822. Chernow points to his father, Jesse, having strong abolitionist views.
Yeah, and Grant himself having this early moral sensitivity. He apparently hated violence, hated cruelty to animals, which is quite the thing for a future general.
A paradox, yeah. And West Point wasn't really his dream, was it?
Not at all. He went reluctantly, but he was good at math, surprisingly, even though he hated the discipline.
Then the Mexican-American War, his first taste of combat.
Right, and he's watching guys like Zachary Taylor, Winfield Scott, learning, developing that style Chernow talks about. Quiet observation followed by bold action.
But then comes that really rough patch. After he resigns from the army in 54, what Chernow calls the wilderness years.
Oh, yeah. Nearly a decade of just struggle, depression. Drinking Chernow links it often to loneliness when he was separated from his family.
And failure after failure in civilian life. Farming. What was it called? Hardscrabble.
Hardscrabble, yeah. Literally trying to farm rocks.
Yeah.
That failed. Real estate failed. Rent collecting failed. He ends up working as a clerk in his dad's leather shop in Galena, Illinois, seen as a total failure.
But Chernow sees this period differently, doesn't he?
Absolutely crucial. He argues these aren't just signs of incompetence. This is where Grant learns deep empathy for ordinary people. It forges his determination, his resilience, that quiet strength.
So the failures actually prepared him.
In a profound way. They taught him how to endure hardship without losing his core decency. Chernow suggests his greatest strengths came from this low point, not from West Point.
And then, 1861, the Civil War changes everything.
Suddenly, this obscure failure finds his calling. He starts as a volunteer, quickly becomes a colonel, whips an unruly regiment into shape.
Then those early victories, Forts Henry and Donelson, that's where he gets the nickname, right? Unconditional surrender grant.
Yep. Gave the Union its first big wins when they desperately needed them. But then Shiloh, a brutal, bloody battle, huge casualties.
And massive criticism aimed at Grant.
Huge criticism. But he showed that unflappable calm under extreme pressure. He rallied the troops. It's hard to picture the quiet clerk from Galena doing that.
But Vicksburg, that seems to be the real turning point militarily. Chernow calls it his masterpiece.
Oh, absolutely. A brilliant, audacious, complex operation. Capturing that last Confederate stronghold on the Mississippi, cutting the Confederacy in two, it defied all the military textbooks.
And that got Lincoln's attention.
That plus Chattanooga later. Lincoln finally knew he had his general. Defended him fiercely. I can't spare this man. He fights.
So Lincoln sees past the criticism, past the maybe the rough edges.
He sees the results. He sees the determination. And Chernow argues Lincoln also saw Grant's political understanding, his grasp of the bigger picture.
And this is where, as you said, it gets really interesting strategically.
Yeah, because Grant wasn't fighting like the generals before him. He understood this was different. This was total war.
Meaning
you had to destroy the enemy's ability and will to fight. Not just win battles, but break their resources, their infrastructure, their morale. Relentless, coordinated pressure everywhere at once. It was revolutionary for the time.
And that plays out when Lincoln makes him lieutenant general in 64, commanding all the armies. He goes head-to-head with Lee.
Right, the Overland Campaign. And this is where Chernow really tackles the Grant the Butcher myth head-on.
That idea that he just threw men away carelessly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Chernow argues Grant understood the terrible math of modern industrial war. That winning required total commitment, yes, and heavy casualties were unavoidable against a determined enemy like Lee. But his relentless pressure, never letting Lee rest or recover, was actually designed to shorten the war, ultimately saving lives.
Unlike previous commanders who kept retreating after battle,
Grant just kept pushing, relentlessly, through the wilderness, Spotsylvania, Cold Harbor, all the way to the siege of Petersburg.
Which finally leads to Appomattox, Lee's surrender.
And even there, in that moment of total victory, Grant shows that magnanimity. Letting soldiers keep horses, sidearms, providing food.
Setting a tone of reconciliation.
Desperately hoping that tone would stick. He knew the fight wasn't truly over.
Which brings us to his presidency. Elected overwhelmingly in 1868, Chernow says it's been unjustly maligned.
Deeply maligned, largely because of that loss caused backlash. Grant's main goal was clear. Secure the peace and protect the civil rights of the millions of newly freed slaves.
And he went after the Ku Klux Klan hard.
He declared war on them.
Yeah.
Created the Justice Department specifically to prosecute them, pushed through the Enforcement Acts, federal laws giving him power to act, sent in troops.
And it worked. For a time.
Remarkably successful for a while. He effectively crushed the first wave of the Klan in many areas. Think about the courage that took. No president had used federal power like that for civil rights before.
He also oversaw the 15th Amendment ratification.
Guaranteeing voting rights for black men. And he tried that peace policy towards Native Americans, a genuine, if flawed, attempt to move away from pure extermination towards something like assimilation and protection.
It's incredible how forward-thinking that was.
Decades ahead of its time. And Chernow emphasizes this wasn't just policy for Grant. It stemmed from a real moral conviction. And that's what made him such a threat to those who wanted to roll back Reconstruction.
Of course, you can't talk about his presidency without mentioning the scandals. Credit mobilier, the whiskey ring.
Right. And Chernow doesn't shy away from them. His take is that Grant himself was personally honest, fundamentally decent, but he was a terrible judge of character.
Too loyal to corrupt friends and appointees.
Exactly. Betrayed by that loyalty. It was a blind spot. And sadly, the political will in the North to keep pushing Reconstruction faded. The Supreme Court chipped away at the Enforcement Acts.
Paving the way for Jim Crow.
Tragically, yes. Despite Grant's efforts.
After the presidency, there's that huge world tour. He's treated like a global hero.
A rock star, basically. Huge crowds everywhere.
But then disaster strikes again. He gets wiped out financially.
Yeah, swindled in a massive Ponzi scheme by a guy named Ferdinand Ward. Utterly devastating. Publicly humiliated, left penniless.
And then he gets diagnosed with terminal throat cancer.
It's just one blow after another. But this leads to his final heroic act.
Writing the memoirs.
His personal memoirs. racing against time and excruciating pain to provide for his family, Mark Twain helps him get it published.
And they become this instant classic, right? A huge bestseller.
Huge. And a literary masterpiece, considered one of the greatest military memoirs ever written. Simple, direct, honest. It was his final victory.
Wow, what a final chapter.
It really is the story of redemption, isn't it? His honesty, his fight for civil rights, overshadowed for so long. But the memoirs, written under such duress, they secured his family's future and cemented his true legacy. Chernow really highlights how this life, marked by so much failure and struggle, ended in this incredible triumph of integrity.
So, looking beyond just the events, what was driving him? What were Grant's core values, according to Chernow? We see this incredible evolution of moral leadership.
Absolutely. From being sort of passively anti-slavery, like his father, to becoming, as Chernow argues, the most committed presidential advocate for African-American rights between Lincoln and LBJ.
And his war experiences were key to that, seeing slavery up close.
Definitely. Seeing the courage of black soldiers, the brutality of the system, it transformed his views.
And his military genius, it wasn't just about tactics, was it?
No, it was deeper. Strategic vision, psychological insight, understanding that total commitment was needed, maybe even that ruthlessness, in a way, could shorten the suffering by ending the war faster.
And that ties into his vision for democracy, which was incredibly progressive on race.
Decades ahead of its time, believing in federal power to protect citizens' rights. That was radical then.
Loyalty seems like a double-edged sword for him.
Huge strength in the military, building trust with his commanders, but a major weakness as president, leading to those scandals. It reflected his decency, maybe, but also his naivete about people's motives.
It feels like his personal struggles, the drinking, the failures, actually prepared him for leadership in some ways.
Chernow certainly makes that case. That overcoming those things gave him empathy, strengthened his resolve. He knew what it felt like to be down.
And there was a real cost to his moral courage, wasn't there? Fighting for civil rights made him enemies who actively worked to destroy his name.
Absolutely. It shows that real moral leadership often comes with sacrifice, with backlash. It's not the easy path.
So this character emerges, shy, but with this iron will. Fails businessman, military genius, quiet, but driven by this powerful moral compass.
That's a fascinating paradox, isn't it?
Okay.
He had that famous quote, right? The art of war is simple enough. Find out where your enemy is. Get at him as soon as you can. Strike him as hard as you can and keep moving on.
Pure decisiveness.
But then at Appomattox, you see the magnanimity. Feeling anything rather than rejoicing at the fall of a brave foe, even while being crystal clear that their cause, slavery, was one of the worst for which a people ever fought. That combination of toughness and moral clarity is key.
Okay, so Chernow highlights three moments that really defined Grant's path. Pivotal turning points. The first one goes back to those wilderness years, right? 1854 to 61.
Yeah, that decade of failure. Resigning from the army, the farming disaster, the poverty, the drinking, working as a clerk. It sounds like rock bottom.
But transformative how?
Because Chernow argues it forged him. It built resilience like nothing else could. It taught him empathy. It strengthened that quiet, stubborn determination. It wasn't just a setback. It was essential preparation for enduring the pressures of command later on.
It made him relatable, maybe, to the common soldier.
Perhaps. It certainly made him understand hardship in a way many generals didn't.
Okay, second turning point. The Vicksburg Campaign, 1862-63.
His military masterpiece. That audacious plan to take the Confederate fortress on the Mississippi. It defied conventional wisdom, involved complex maneuvers, river crossings, sieges.
And why was that so transformative?
It cemented his reputation as the Union general who could win. It was a massive strategic victory, splitting the Confederacy. And, crucially, it convinced Lincoln. Without Vicksburg, he might not have gotten overall command.
It proved his genius on a grand scale.
Exactly. It wasn't just winning a battle. It was executing a complex, war-altering campaign.
And the third turning point, Chernow argues, happens during his presidency. The war on the Ku Klux Klan, roughly 1869 to 71.
Yeah, his decision to use the full power of the federal government, the new Justice Department, the Enforcement Acts, the Army, to crush the Klan's reign of terror in the South.
And the transformation here.
It showed his absolute unwavering commitment to racial equality and using federal power to enforce it. Decades ahead of its time. It marks him as a pioneering civil rights president.
But it made him public enemy number one for the lost cause, folks.
Precisely. This principled stand, this moral courage, is exactly what led to the backlash and the generations-long effort to discredit him and erase this part of his legacy.
It's incredible how these moments weave together failure leading to strength, military success leading to national leadership, and moral leadership leading to historical attack.
It really makes you think, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
How often are leaders' greatest strengths forged in their toughest times? Or how often does taking the right stand lead to the biggest fight against your reputation? It's a recurring theme.
So stepping back from the history, what can we, you know, today take away from Grant's life? It feels like more than just dates and battles.
Oh, absolutely. It resonates deeply.
First off, just the sheer power of perseverance and learning from failure. I mean, those pre-war years, that's a list of failures that would crush most people.
Right. But he didn't become bitter. He just endured and learned. It's a huge lesson that your past doesn't have to define your future. Failure can be preparation.
And then his fight against the Klan. That feels like a lesson in moral leadership in really polarized times.
Totally. It got politically difficult, unpopular even in the North eventually. But he stuck to his guns, stood up for the most vulnerable people in the country. That takes guts. It's about doing what's right, not just what's popular.
There's also something about finding your unique arena, isn't there? He was terrible at business, but a genius in war.
Yeah, it teaches you to figure out where your specific strengths lie. Maybe it's calmness or focus or strategic thinking, and lean into that instead of trying to be something you're not. Find your battlefield, so to speak.
He also seemed to manage immense personal struggles while leading, the drinking, the financial stress.
Right, which offers lessons on self-awareness, maybe needing support systems, but also just functioning under incredible pressure while dealing with your own stuff.
And the scandals, while tragic, they're kind of a cautionary tale too, aren't they? About integrity being undermined by naivete or blind loyalty.
Definitely. You have to have personal integrity, sure, but you also have to hold the people around you accountable. Judging character matters, especially when you're in charge.
So zooming out, Grant's story kind of reminds you that greatness can pop up in the most unlikely places, right?
Yeah, and that true leadership often comes out of hardship, not easy wins. It's about that quiet resilience, that sense of duty, the determination to just keep going.
Okay. As we start to wrap this up, let's try to distill three final takeaways from Chernow's portrait of Grant. What really sticks with you?
All right. Let's try.
First, maybe an emotional insight. For me, it's the profound possibility of personal transformation and redemption. Seeing Grant evolve from that struggling, demon-plagued figure to a national leader. And then that final heroic act, writing the memoirs while dying. It just powerfully shows that failure isn't final. That quiet resilience can lead to real, lasting integrity.
That's a great one, yeah.
Okay, second, an intellectual insight. History isn't fixed, is it? It's an ongoing argument. Narratives get twisted, often for political reasons, and then sometimes, painstakingly, they get corrected. The whole story of Grant's reputation destroyed by the Lost Cause because of his civil rights stance, then rebuilt by Chernow, that teaches you to be critical consumers of history, right? To see how agendas shape the past, we're told.
Absolutely. Question the narrative. Understand why it was constructed that way. Crucial insight.
And finally, a universal insight. Authentic moral courage often means fighting for unpopular ideas, ideas that might only be proven right long after you're gone. Grant's commitment to racial equality, using federal power to protect minorities, even when it cost him politically. That's a timeless lesson for any leader, isn't it? Focus on the long-term moral compass, not just short-term wins. Stand up for the vulnerable.
Perfectly put. That long view, that commitment to principle, even when it's hard, that's enduring.
So as you go about your day, maybe think about this. Is there a deeply held belief or a historical fact you've always accepted that might deserve a fresh look, a new deep dive? And how could those lessons from Grant, quiet resilience, moral courage, apply to the challenges you're facing? Thanks so much for joining us for this exploration.
Yeah, and it leaves you with that question, doesn't it? How can we get better, maybe as individuals, maybe as a society, at recognizing and honoring that kind of moral clarity when it happens, you know, before waiting decades for historians to tell us who the real heroes were.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation,